You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net. Who's Dead? A Paranormal BDSM Romance by Mahogany Silvering. Keiko Reed finds what she never expects in the arms of a werewolf Daddy Dom, an alpha of the Wolf House MC. Fleeing her abusive ex from a rival MC, she runs into Gerald Brothers. He takes her under his protection and believes she is the one that he has been searching for. He claims her in every way and gives her the sacred bite of the werewolf. Soon after, he is betrayed by a club member to the rival MC, putting not only Keiko, but the club and the small town of Golden Tip, Colorado at risk. Will Gerald go to war with the rival MC, risking everything for his precious little one? Wolf Dead, a paranormal BDSM romance by Mahogany Silvering, available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Henry Santana, a misunderstood millionaire with a playboy reputation, will do whatever it takes to transform historic Newport, Rhode Island's waterfront into the world's largest five-star resort community. Victoria Hathaway, an introverted bookseller, is fearful of losing all she holds dear, a thriving business along Newport Harbor and her multi-generation colonial home that stands in the way of the resort community. Sparks fly when Victoria meets Henry, a handsome stranger, until she discovers he's the one who is threatening to take her land. Desperate and determined, Victoria struggles to save her home and her livelihood while ignoring her growing attraction for the man who threatens to destroy it all. The Prodigal's Desire, Book 1 of the Seaside Desire series by author Valerie Lynn. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining me on the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silvering, and we have an excellent show for tonight, a real treat, because Miss Melanie Johnson is, her voice is amazing, and they call her the voice for a reason, and so I'm eager to let you guys hear it. So let's welcome Melanie M. Johnson. Say hello.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you. I mean, this is like a real treat for me since I haven't really had any poets on the show, so you're like my first or second.
Wow.
But
wow.
Just, you know, hearing you, that I was just blown. I was like, I got to get this woman on here.
Thank you. I'm happy to have this opportunity to share with you guys because a lot of times as poets, you don't get those opportunities to share outside of the poetry world. And when you're able to share with the world, it just opens up opportunities and it gives me other ideas of things to write about. So thank you.
Awesome. So Melanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you started writing poetry?
Well, my name is Melanie Johnson. I am an educator. Well, I like to call myself an educational influencer because I teach more than just what's in the books. I am an author, a poet, a publisher, a motivational speaker, and just whatever I can do to help someone. I am a survivor of domestic abuse, and therefore I am an advocate for domestic abuse prevention. And I partner with a domestic abuse center here in Laurel, Mississippi, to try to get, you know, resources and things for those women and families who are, you know, trying to start over. I am also a survivor of suicide and two suicide attempts. So I try to speak out, especially to my students, about suicide awareness and suicide prevention, because a lot of times they just need to know that they're not alone and that mm-hmm. there's someone there that can listen to them and that wants to hear them. So I try to reach out and do those things. What made me start writing poetry? It was actually about 2 years ago. I mm-hmm. wrote my first book, and it was actually my book started as a journal about my life, suffering through domestic abuse and thriving in the midst of it. And I wanted to be able to formulate, my life, because I didn't know who I was at that time. Because mm-hmm. I had lost a part of me. I had been in an abusive relationship for 23 years of an abusive marriage. And I lost myself. So my first book is entitled Womanly Wisdom, What They Couldn't Tell Me. And it chronicles my life trying to deal with domestic abuse and mental health issues, because I am diagnosed as having severe manic depression, which is now being called bipolar. But I don't have like the bipolar. I'm just like mellow. I don't have the bipolar, the sudden change. And once I started writing,
what is that, bipolar 2?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I wrote my journal to me, and I had my mentor to read it, and I shared parts of it with him, and he suggested that others might be able to heal from it or get some type of guidance from it. So he encouraged me to take my journal and to write it as a book, and don't be shy about what I write. Just be open and honest and real and raw and relevant. And I did that. And what was funny to me was the responses that I got, because I always thought nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest thing, I don't think people will listen to me. And he said, okay, so what would you consider successful? I said, if my book gets listed on Amazon and one person purchases it, then that's success for me, because I want that one person to want to hear what I have to say. But the responses, the pre-sales were astronomical compared to what I was thinking. I ordered my first 100 and sold them before they even arrived. And it was just shocking to hear. And from me opening up, I just started just jotting down ideas. And one of my friends sent me a request to enter into this anthology. And it was a poetic book based on George Floyd. And it was entitled Just Let Me Breathe.
Oh, yeah.
And
wow.
I submitted my first piece of poetry to him, and he said, yes, clean it up, because I submitted it at 12:30 in the morning. I wrote it while I was asleep. And he said, clean it up, because there was probably typos and everything in there. He said, clean it up, send it back to me, and he actually put it in the anthology, and that sparked my interest, that maybe I can put poetry together. So after my first book was released, then I just started writing poetic pieces. And it was during COVID. I had COVID in January of 2021. And during that time, I just got a lot of my pieces, actually 50 of them, and I put them together and published them as my second book, which is my poetic book. It's entitled Flavor of Melanin. And it contains poetic professions of essence. That's what I call it, poetic professions of essence, because it has all different flavors in there. You'll find poems about social justice issues, poems about domestic abuse. There's a poem in there about education and autism. And of course, there's some love poems and some about religion and church. So it's just all the different flavors that make me.
Yes. Exactly. And I read that it's also a bestseller. So
yes. Yes, it debuted as number one during this second week, first week, and I was like, wow, I never expected that, because this is coming from a country girl perspective who thought nobody mm-hmm. wanted to hear what I had to say.
Yeah, sometimes we think that, but you never know. Your words could be ministering
yeah.
to someone, you know, who's thinking, okay, I'm at the end of my rope, and they hear it, you know, or they
yeah.
read, and it's like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. I'm not the only one that goes through that.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, I've only heard you say a couple of poems that
mm-hmm.
is on the Clubhouse book slam, which I will say that's
yeah.
on Tuesday nights at 8, so you guys make sure you kind of get in there. It's an app you put on your phone, so you'll find other poets like Melanie and other authors that come on that time from like 8 to, I think it was like, is it 8 to 10 or is it 8 to 9?
8 to 10. Sometimes
to 10.
We go
okay.
over if it just gets really good, like Tuesday night it did. And sometimes we have people bring in pieces that spark conversations that extend the time, but it's always an amazing time on the book slam.
Ah, yes. I've enjoyed sitting in. Sometimes I was like, oh, you called me. Wait a minute.
Yes.
But it is excellent. I get to hear other authors and how they do things, and hear people when they say their poetry, and there's a certain cadence to kind of, I call
mm-hmm.
it that, probably not the right word.
Yes.
And rhythm.
It's exactly the right word. That's what we use all the time.
Yes. So I've written poems, but I've never published them. The only one I've ever published was in the beginning of my book, Wolf Daddy. And it was a very intimate poem that I wrote for him. So that was my first time actually publishing one of my poems. But they were, to me, they were kind of personal.
mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how people would receive that. I mean, I already put myself out there with the books, but yeah.
Yeah. Most of my poems are very personal. Someone, I was on the book slam, the European book slam this afternoon, and Jules, the host from somewhere in Great Britain or England or something, I'm not exactly sure, but she was saying that my poems are always so deep and they seem like they connect on a personal level, and that was one of the things that I told God that I wanted to be a voice for the people who could not speak for themselves. So I find that a lot of my writing tends to deal with issues where people who normally you don't hear from are actually being represented.
Which is really amazing. Because
yeah.
you're just listening to you read, it really touches you, your words and the way you speak them. I see why they call you the voice. I saw that right away. So, but it's just your poetry and the way you read. Well, I'm not going to even go into too much detail because I really want you to read some of your poems so that my audience can understand, you know, for real what I'm trying to say.
Okay. One of them that I want to share, I got a few that's like my signature pieces. This is one that I wrote that I feel embodies what I went through as a woman transitioning from being a domestic abuse victim to domestic abuse survivor. And it is entitled Broken Mirrors Still Reflect.
Oh, okay.
Shattered images, sharp edges, fragmented pieces of disconnect. Although it seems worthless and useless, wasteful rubbish, we yet find that broken mirrors still reflect. I may not focus on the whole picture and therefore not getting the full effect, but what I can see are images of me reminding me that broken mirrors still reflect. Focusing on one piece over another, each detail trying to inspect, will only leave me wondering, my own self-image I'm blundering, to see just what broken mirrors will reflect. Reflection is a reactive speech, only responding to the image or subject. So what if I dislike or don't think I look like the image the broken mirror reflects? Because the reflection is broken, it doesn't mean I'm a wreck. Different angles it shows of a woman who grows from ashes nobody would disclose, and turmoil she never chose to finally expose what she supposes that everyone should know, that no matter what, you should glow, knowing that broken mirrors still reflect. Thank you.
Wow. Now that was beautiful. That was
Thank
really
you.
Beautiful. I love how deep your poems are, and it's just, you can also see that, you know, not just feel it. But I like the whole mirror.
This one, I use the mirror reference because in my book, Womanly Wisdom, I talk about how I hated my own image. I did not like looking at myself in the mirror. So I would, for years, I could get dressed and not look at myself fully in the mirror. When I did my hair, I only looked at my hair. When I did my makeup, I only looked at that particular part. So if I did my eyeshadow, I only looked at my eye. If I did my lips, I only looked at my lips. I never saw the complete woman because I didn't like what was looking at me in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And so it was like I saw myself as fragmented pieces all the time. But what I had to learn was that those fragmented pieces together represented a full woman. And I had to make sure that the picture, that the image that was reflected was the one that I wanted to be reflected. I had to glow because it was still going to reflect in the eyesight of others. Just because I saw fragmented pieces is not what everybody else would see.
Wow. Now that's interesting. I know I had trouble with self-image myself, and that, you know, that's kind of like affirming, you know, how we, because we do look at ourselves. If you think about it, you're right. Because there's things that we don't like about ourselves, or, you know, I had low self-esteem for a while. And I was really quiet.
Oh, I did, like, almost my whole life, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, and I look at your pictures, and I'm like, I can't believe that you would have self-esteem. It's just because you're such a beautiful woman.
Thank you.
But a lot of times, you know, we look at people and we think about, you know, oh, they're beautiful. They must have it all. They must have everything they want the way they want it, but it doesn't work that way.
No,
because the group of students came by, I was talking to my students about suicide prevention, and they were talking about the kind of people that would commit suicide or attempt to commit suicide. And it's not a look that you can tell. It's, you know, you got to listen for key words and key phrases. And they were like, you know, they acted as if they couldn't fathom anybody who would try to commit suicide. So God just told me, speak up. And so at that point in time, I said, I tried twice. And they looked at me like, wow. Why would you try? You got everything you want. I was like, no, I didn't. I didn't have everything I wanted because I didn't understand what I wanted at the time. So they had to. They got a chance to see who they call their favorite teacher could have not even been here at this time.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
That I can relate to. I tried to kill myself as a teenager. And actually a few months ago, to be honest, I hit an all-time low with things that just weren't working, and it, you know, I'm already have issues with depression, but I was just at a really low point and in a manic state, so I can definitely understand that. And yeah, I mean, you look through the day, oh, they got it all together, and you're gorgeous yourself. I mean, I look at your pictures and I was like, oh, she's
Thank
beautiful.
You.
So, and that Thank confidence you exude, just, I mean, I was like, okay, I need to have more confidence like her.
Really. And it's funny, throughout my entire marriage that did not feel confident at all. Those 23 years were, they stripped me of a lot of things that I think that I probably would have had or would have accomplished, but they stripped me of it. And I was a shell of a person at the end of those 23 years. And it was like, okay, it was life or death. And it was like, okay, either you live or you die. Which one are you going to choose? And I chose life. And when I chose life, I had to learn me all over again. And I had a wonderful mentor that helped me to understand my feelings and understand why I felt the way I felt, because I thought I didn't fit in. I didn't think like everybody else. And I thought that meant something was wrong with me. But what I had to realize was that it's not that I'm wrong. I'm just different.
You're just different.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of creative people who write, who sing, who act, who, you know, draw, you know, make these beautiful paintings, all of us, we have some sort of, you know, we're just different. But then that's what makes us good at what we do.
Yes.
Because we're able to express that, whereas some people can't. You know, they don't know how to express things. But when you're a creative and you use that side of the brain, there, right side and left side brainers, but it, we actually can tap into that and create beautiful things, beautiful work of art, you know, beautiful voices. I mean, just, you know, painting pictures with books. So that when people read, they can see it in their mind. And, you know, just hearing your story just makes it all kind of come together. And that is all the pieces of you. You've really kind of worked out those pieces. You sound very, very confident. And I think there's one caller that's on here. Let's see if they want to join us.
Okay.
Hello? Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Mahogany?
Introduce yourself. Yes, it's me.
This is Indy Brennan. How you doing?
Oh, good. How are you?
Good evening, Indy.
How you doing? How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing well.
I didn't know how this worked, so I didn't know I was just going to be plugged in. But interesting.
Thank you.
Yes, she is awesome.
It's a great question.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for introducing us.
And Mahogany, I must tell you that the moniker, The Voice, actually was given to me by Indy.
Nice.
I was on the show a while, and then he just said, I'm going to call her The Voice. And I'm like, The Voice? Okay. It's funny because for a long time, I didn't even like my voice. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But you have a great voice.
I've learned. I've learned to like it. I've learned that everybody else likes it, so I need to like it.
I know. I could just listen to you read all day. I mean, it's just like, yeah, read.
Really?
Yes.
I think that's what William said the first time he heard me read. Yeah.
I would, definitely. I mean, like, I love the way you read and the, you know, just the lilt of your voice and just everything is like hitting. It's like music to me. I don't know how people feel, but that's how I felt the first time I heard you.
Really? Like, wow. It's funny you say that because I love music and I think that poetry is like music and words.
Yes. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
What did you think, Andy?
No, her voice is amazing. I don't think there's been anyone on the she's probably one of the most admired voices that has come on the Book Slam.
Oh, my God.
really? Men and we've had, you know, some incredible people come through the Book Slam, but Melanie's voice is just incredibly memorable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and she's had – She's had a billion comments made about her voice, so I don't see how she doesn't get that. But yes, she has an amazing voice, and so do you, Mahogany. Like I said the other day when when you actually performed, you have your voice is very unique, very unique to especially to your genre of music. I mean, genre of reading unto music. But yeah, very unique, very very unique. It was interesting because you all were talking about suicide and depression. And again, I kind of chimed in late. I don't know if Melanie told you about the other efforts that she's assisting with.
No,
I haven't.
You haven't? Okay.
Yeah, it's actually called All the Preacher's Wives. It's an anthology. Yeah, it's an anthology that we're, I guess, a group of us that we're putting together, being headed up by Tonisha Fanchon out of Dallas, Texas, real estate investor out of Dallas, Texas. And basically it's just a bunch of, it's 20 women, ex and existing pastors' wives, sharing their, giving everybody a glimpse of what it is to be a pastor's wife. Melanie is actually one of the contributors. I had no idea, you were talking about depression. I had no idea, and Melanie probably can talk about this a lot more than I, how lonely that life is, the life of a pastor's wife, because she can't share her, she can't talk to people in the church 9 times out of 10, because whatever she says will be all over the church by nightfall.
Oh, yeah.
And she can't talk to other pastor's wives. Yeah, can't talk to your family.
Because being the family's not going to like the pastor.
Right, right. Or they pick the pastor guy because he's the pastor. So find yourself kind of sitting in the corner pulling your hair out, wondering, you know, how you can get rid of this guy in some cases. But there are also a lot of cases where it's just like Crystal Henry, where it's just an amazing love story. Where she wanted to kill him, but the love they have is just amazing at this point. So, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk any more about it, Melanie, but yeah, she's actually contributing to it. Her stories are amazing.
Yes,
they are.
Being that I'm an ex-pastor's wife, it's going to be kind of interesting to share. But one of the things that I want to make sure that people know about the anthology, it's not like a preacher bashing book. It's a book to help guide other women who are either just coming into the ministry or have been in the ministry and find themselves and don't want to talk to. It's just to give them encouragement and support of things that's happening. Because even though I went through some ridiculous things as a pastor's wife, God still worked with me and allowed me to do some amazing work within the church and in the community. So it gives you opportunities that you may not have otherwise. But it's some struggles that come with it. And the purpose of this book is to try to dispel some myths about being a pastor's wife, but also to encourage the ones that are in that in those trenches, keep going, keep pushing, and give them ideas to help them to cope with things that come up and they can't talk about with other people.
Most definitely. I want to read that.
And it's funny, my mom.
It's funny. I mean, I'm not saying it's funny, but my first husband was a minister. Now, he did not pastor a church, but he was the deacon. And so technically that made me a deaconess, I guess. And it was a Baptist church in New Mexico. And like everything I did was scrutinized. I was younger than he was, much younger. So it was a little more difficult. It's like he expected me to be submissive and all these things that, you know, a minister's wife should be, according to the scriptures. But I was 22 years old and he was 45. So and that's my abusive marriage. That's the abuse I endured because, you know, in front of everyone, he was the minister and behind closed doors, he was evil.
Yeah.
You know, I could never do anything right. But I think there, and I think I may not be the only one. So mm-hmm. I think it's really great that you guys are doing this anthology to, you know, open up about what it's like being a pastor's wife. And those Go ahead.
And we're not doing just the anthology. It's the whole weekend that's planned around it where the mm-hmm. women will be invited out to Dallas to come and just enjoy being around one another, sharing ideas. There's going to be some live interviews going on at the residence, and then it culminates to attending the Potter's House that Sunday before leaving to go home. So it's a wonderful event for anyone who is able to or who wants to join. We still have a few spots available, right, Indy?
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Yeah, that is definitely correct.
So if you know some preacher's wives that need to tell their stories and want to contribute, mm-hmm. just let us know.
Awesome. Yeah. I would definitely do that. Wish I could go to Dallas. I used to live in Texas at one time, San Antonio and Houston, but and Euless, which is outside of Dallas. But yeah, it sounds amazing. So are there any other pieces you would like to share?
Yes. One of my favorite pieces, it was inspired by Maya Angelou's poem. I'm not going to say the name. I'm just going to let you hear it, and then you'll mm-hmm. figure it out. But it's entitled Melanin Marvel. Society has yet to understand how I can exist without a man. But when I divulge information, they think I can't when I can. I say, it's in the fire of my soul, the power in my words, my head raised high, my voice unheard. I'm a marvel, melanated, melanin marvel. Don't hate it. When I enter the scene, I'm often ignored and neglected. When I start to speak, the naysayers and haters stand to be corrected. All of their thoughts, good or bad, are appropriately affected. I say, it's in the relevance of my language, the complexity of my brain, the reach of my influence that cannot be contained. I'm a marvel, melanated, melanin marvel. Don't hate it. Some are intimidated by my intellect. They try to ignore until they can't anymore, continue their level of disrespect, but instead recognize the value they see in retrospect. I say, it's in the power of my tongue, the formation of my lips, the swag displayed when my melanin drips. I'm a marvel. Melanated, melanin marvel, don't hate it. So, the verdict is in, and now you should see, I don't need another to clearly define me. When you encounter my presence, grateful you should be. I say, it's in the soul of my ancestors that made me free, the teaching of my parents and the God in me. 'Cause I'm a marvel, melanated, melanin marvel. Don't hate it. Thank you.
Oh, now that was awesome. It does remind me of my Angelou poem.
Yes, that was
yes.
based on Phenomenal Woman.
Yes,
it was actually
say that.
It was actually a challenge somebody presented to me, and they wanted me to write a poem that was based on another poet's poem. And that was the first thing I thought about. I said, if I can write something based on Phenomenal Woman. And I just sit there and thought about it one weekend, and I just wrote it.
Oh, that was awesome. I like that. See, now, in my mind, you are Miss Marvel.
Thank you.
Marvel Comics got nothing on you. You are Miss Marvel.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Most definitely. Indy, what'd you think about that?
I was funny in my head. I was like, "That girl, good." No, it's it was. no, she's Melanie's amazing. She's just amazing. Her execution, her words are beautiful, but then the execution is just as close to flawless as you can get. It's just beautiful. It's funny because working on her audiobook, and her voice to music and sound effects is just it's breathtaking.
Wow.
So yeah, she's absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
You are. I totally agree. Just, like I said, the way you spoke that, and you just, you know, made it more real. It's just, you know, it's more than a poem. You know, I could get that sense of self-love. It really does come out. And to be, you know, that confident to say that. And I really like that.
It took a lot of me crying and trying to argue with myself to really understand my own worth and my own value. So when I was able to write those words, it was a testament to me. And I was hoping that other people would be able to get it. But it was a testament to me of how marvelous we are as people. And how others can kind of discount us or think that we don't measure up because we don't meet their standards. But you're marveling yourself, just being you. So, yeah, that was my inspiration to write those lines.
I love it, because we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And I guess we don't realize it sometimes. It's good to hear other people, you know, recognize that as well, because we may not think, okay, it may not be the best, but this is me, kind of. And you find out so many people, so many other people feel that way.
Yes. And a lot of times we keep our mouths closed and we don't express how we feel. And we don't express the things that we've gone through, and others are out there suffering, going through the same things, and they're not getting the inspiration they need because our mouths are closed.
Exactly.
And, I had a cousin who was found, her body was burned in her car, and nobody has been arrested. It's been about 4 years now. No one has been arrested for her death, but we all have speculation about what happened, and it has to do with domestic abuse. And I remember when she was still missing, and before we found out what happened to her, I had talked to my aunt, and, you know, I didn't know that she was going through the things that she was going through. And I was planning to go see my aunt that weekend, and that's when they found her body, like a day before I went up there. And when I saw my aunt, she hugged me, and she said, "If you would have talked to her, I think she would still be here." And that crushed me, because at that point in time, I said, "Okay, my silence is deadly." God got me out of the situation because I had a gun pointed to me, and it was cocked, and I could have been gone. I could have been dead, and God kept me here because I didn't fight back. All I did was turn over, went to sleep with the gun pointed at me, and prayed. So I knew I had a purpose for being here, but at that moment when my aunt said those words to me, I realized how deadly my silence is. So that's when I told God, okay, from this point forward, when given the opportunity, I will speak out and be a voice for the people who can't speak, who can't say how they feel. Because at one point in time, I was that girl. I was the woman who couldn't speak. So now when I speak out, I'm speaking for me too.
Amazing. Most definitely. Wow. But I mean, what trauma just from having a gun pointed at you. I would think, I wouldn't even know what to do. I honestly don't know if I would react or just sit there frozen, you know. I've never had a gun pointed at me. I've had guns,
yeah,
but I've never had one pointed at me. So I can only imagine
I was actually able, you know, to write a poem about it after getting out of the situation and just processing things. I was able to write a poem about it, and it helped me to be able to process it a little bit more, because that's a sound that you don't get. It doesn't go away. That's an image that doesn't fade. So I was able to process that.
Would you share that poem with us?
Sure. It's entitled Click.
Mm-hmm.
Click was the sound I heard as I drew near. Click. What was he doing? What's this I hear? The sound of a firearm being cocked. And why doesn't he have the safety lock? Click. What did I do to warrant this? Click. This is not something I can easily dismiss. I needed to take this seriously because it could lead to the end of me. Click. What should I do? Just turn and run? Click. Where could I go? I should have been gone. It shouldn't take this to find some peace. I would have been gone if he would release. Click was the sound I would never forget. Click. For in that moment, I began to regret staying around and waiting for change when the person I saw acted deranged. If I make it out of this, I will be grateful. I will leave at the given moment, not acting hateful, but taking care of my sanity. Oh, the sound stopped. By the grace of God, my keen observation never dropped. It was not by my own doing I knew to go. It was by God's direction that I would know what and when, leaving when there were no more clicks. No longer did I have to put up with his silly tricks. Thank you.
Wow. I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional right now. I could picture that in my mind. I really feel for you, that that's not something. Oh.
Yeah, that one was quite an emotional draw for me to write about. And I never actually shared it with anybody except my mentor when I first wrote it, until November of last year. I was on an interview, and I decided to share it. I decided to just voice it because I had never voiced it before. And my abuser, my ex-husband, just happened to be about 3 miles away from where I was reciting the poem, and he was in ICU in the hospital. He had a brain aneurysm, and that was the first time I was able to say it, and it was actually the first time I felt like a release from things. And it was 3 days later, he ended up passing away. And I felt not relieved, but I felt safe.
Yes.
Because
that's understandable.
At that point in time, I didn't have the fear of, because he had followed me in traffic before. He had, you know, like staked out the house and see where I was. He had done all those things before, but at that point in time, I said, okay, I don't have to worry about a gun being pointed at me again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was an emotional one.
Yeah, I could definitely feel that too. That's, I'm still like, whew.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that. I've been threatened with stuff and I've been beaten, but I've never had that. Never had a gun pointed at me.
And a lot of people don't understand domestic abuse. And as a pastor's wife, they would say, well, they probably thought that we had the perfect perfect relationship, because I always had to make sure I had the right face on. And they didn't know that his role for me in the church was to sit behind him with a gun in my purse. Like I was his protector. He was supposed to be the one protecting me. And as a pastor's wife, I was not able to be myself and have anybody to talk to. So once I decided that I was going to leave, the one thing that I was so that kept me there, because I knew 18 years prior to me leaving that I should have gone. I was like, okay, this is it. I'm done in this relationship because I can't do anything. But I stayed because I was afraid that, first of all, he had told me that nobody, he's like, well, I got plenty of prospects for my next wife, but I hope you can find somebody that wants you. So in my mind, I thought that this is it. This is all I can ever get. And then I was afraid that if I left him, because this is what my ex-father-in-law had told me, if I left him, that I would break the church up. And I did not want to have that on my back that, I caused the demise of God's house. So I stayed there until I couldn't take it anymore. It was a no more me situation. So when I left, he was actually in the pulpit preaching, and I got the police with me, and he told me, you got 10 minutes to get everything out of the house you want. So I had 10 minutes to get whatever was important to me and just walk away.
Yep. I can feel you on that one. I left while he was at work.
Wow.
Whatever I could fit in the car.
Yeah.
And drove from New Mexico to Texas without a mat. I just knew if I knew I got to Texas, I was good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is something else, because we do believe that we have to stay, because I've said, the divorce, but Moses actually gave, where you can divorce, especially for reasons like that. That's it's not right to subjugate someone else because you think you can, and have you believing that you're not worthy of anybody else, that no one else would want you.
And people always think that abuse has to be marked by bruises and stuff, and scars, but those words don't heal like bruises do.
No.
Bruises can heal up, but those words linger on. And then my ex-husband would use financial abuse, because a lot of times he wasn't working. He would lose his job or quit his job, and he would be sitting at home, and I'm working. And we had to have joint bank accounts, because if not, it was a big fight. And I can remember he would always be at home and time my check at the bank. By the time I get home, over half of it's gone. And then I had to pay bills with what I had. And I secretly got an account, and all I could move out of it without him knowing was $150. So I lived off $150 for an entire month.
Wow. That is something. As a testament to your strength and your survival.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I thank you for sharing that poem with us. That was
thank
really
you.
Powerful, more than you realize, I think. And that's me personally. But I know my listeners, listening to you and, probably thinking that, some of them can relate to you, because there are so many women out there, and men, some men, as well, that hear your words and know that there's a way out, and that they don't have to stay.
No. No, it's not a distance. It's mm-hmm. a way out. And and I had to realize it's going to be hard. Getting out is not like the easy way out. It's not like the easy thing
to
do.
No, it's not.
But you got to choose your heart. It's going to be hard mm-hmm. getting away and starting over. But it's also going to be hard if you stay in that situation and have to fight for your life every single day. So
every
you choose your
day.
Heart. And that's what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had to choose my heart.
Well, I commend you for one. It is very difficult to leave. I didn't stay as long as you did. I stayed about 4 years, but those were
the
4 years.
I knew after the second year that it wasn't working out. After year five, I was like, I got to go. I got
mm-hmm.
to get out of here. And I actually made a deal with God because he was going to school to get his Master's of Divinity at that time. He wasn't a pastor. He wasn't a preacher when I first met him. And so I told God, I said, because I used to write his papers and stuff for him. I said,
mm-hmm.
God, I'm going to help him get out, get his Master's of Divinity. But time he finishes, I got to get out of here. I got to go. I want him
mm-hmm.
to be successful in what he does, but I got to go. I got to save me. And he never got it. He would get in school, end up being kicked out or doing something because of
his
attitude and behavior. And it's like every time he got into a program, and I was like, okay, this is going to be it. And then he get kicked out. I was like, no, Lord, come on now. I made a deal with you, but what God showed me was I can't make deals with him.
Yep.
I just got to
yeah.
do what I need to do.
Yep. That is true. I know sometimes we're sitting up here waiting on God, but he's waiting on us.
Yes. Yes.
May I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was, domestic abuse is something I never understood. I grew up in, I have one sister, and I grew up where, I grew up in an environment where if I touched my sister, I could have just expected to die, moments later. And that was just, and siblings oftentimes get into it, but I've never touched my sister. And it was interesting because I was on a radio, on a blog talk show about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about relationships, and there was a gentleman on there that made a comment, and I ended up leaving the blog talk show because because of what was disturbing was that the host of the show was a woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the man made a comment, and he said, I've always said that any man that touches a woman cannot be considered a man.
Mm-hmm.
This particular man made a comment and said he felt like if a woman hits a man, then he has the right to knock her out.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard. I mean, it was insane. But his comment wasn't as disturbing as the woman who was hosting the show
mm-hmm.
laughing. She was actually
what?
Laughing about what he was saying. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I left the show not because of him. I mean, he was, they say that you can't have a fool requires another fool to have a foolish conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to exit that conversation. But what was, like, it was just really disturbing to hear her laughing. When Melanie shared some of her story with me, and Melanie knows some of my background. we started talking about men can go through it as well, and
mm-hmm.
it's not always physical.
Mm-hmm.
But when she shared her story with me, I mean, my heart just went out to her. But I guess that's part of the thing about being on the book slam. What was interesting was that I was on the books, the book slam was 90% women for the longest. And in January of, it was mostly women. And I had woman after woman come. A lot of the books are about trauma, domestic abuse, molestation, rape, all that type of stuff. And there were good stories as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, what's his name, William Washington. He came on the show January. And his story was his wife left him because he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And And, you know, you can, and Melanie can attest to this because she knows William. You could hear, even in his reading, the trauma, the pain, when he's reciting a lot of his stuff. Yeah, men do go through it, but, I mean, whoever goes through it, I it's just terribly unfortunate, terribly unfortunate.
Yes.
So my heart definitely goes out, Melanie. I've heard Click.
Thank you.
Click, she read Click. The first time she read Click on the book slam, she just blew everybody away. I mean, it was to the point where no one even knew what to say, much like, you know, Mahogany, what you just went through. We didn't know what to say because it is such a remarkable piece, but at the same instant, it's shocking. It's just, you know, it's jaw-dropping. But, you know, like I said, it's Melanie, again, I commend you, I applaud you, continue to applaud you for your strength and your courage as far as getting the word out.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Because you never know who needs to hear it. Oh, you're fine, Indy. Yeah. I have enjoyed listening to your stories and just, I would say that poem really got me. I got really quiet. I was like,
I have to put a disclaimer out when I give that one, because it is an emotional poem, and like we were talking earlier, the emotions that you feel when you write it, when you recite it, they come out, and that's what the reader or the listener feels. So yeah.
Yes,
but if you don't mind, I don't want to end it on such a bad note. I wanted to share one more piece. It's a short piece.
So that
we can kind of see that I'm not just a dreary person.
I get it.
This one is entitled For You. Life is full of grace and adventure, pain, sorrow, and fears too. But all the things I faced and endured, I'd do it all again just for you. Pain and heartache are so minute compared to the love I feel so true. The contrast of the good and the bad does nothing to hinder what I feel for you. You never have to ask of me things I already feel you're due. I'd give the world to see you smile. I'd give it all just for you. You may not feel like you deserve some of the things of which you have no clue. If you could visualize the depths of my feelings, you'd understand why I'm drawn to you. Your attention, care, I never have to pursue. I'd gladly die 1,000 deaths to spend one lifetime loving you. Thank you.
Wow. So you say you want to end with something good. That was good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it does lift, it does lift the mood. Okay, I know we have just a few seconds left. You want to share how people can find you online, your website, social media?
My website is www.bustawordpublishing.com, and Buster is my dog's name who saved my life, so he's always going to be a part of me. Yes. And I'm on Facebook as Melanie Johnson. I'm on IG as Melanie Johnson Speaks. And I'm on Twitter as MM Johnson Speaks. But if you want to find all my links, just go to linktree.com / Melanie Johnson. It's just me. Just my name.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for coming on tonight and sharing your beautiful poetry. And I want to thank you, Indy, for also coming on and sharing your opinions with us. And I have to get you on the show to interview you, too. So.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for listening tonight. And as always, blessings, peace, and love. Thank you. been listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverine at mahoganysilverine.net. Thank you and good night.